Caleb Parsons is 6'9 swing man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for June 30th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today is a man whose outright refusal to answer his email is matched only by his passionate man love for Ben Zobrist, the one and only Phil Kegler.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you work hard and then you play hard, Adam. So, you know, I'm back in the grind here today. Glad all of you can join us whenever you listen to this. Wanted to tell you about a new special thing we're going to be doing over the next 3 weeks. As Adam said, we're taping this on a Tuesday. In today's paper, if you pick up a copy of The Alligator, if you look on alligatorsports.org, you'll see I wrote a mini column, a couple hundred words, on we're doing a new segment, the top 10 UF athletes of 2008 to 2009. So the last previous athletic year, we're going back. We went through six of our columnists are involved. It's Mike DiFernando, Mike McCall, Kyle Maestri, Bobby Colovi, Adam and I. Mm-hmm. And as a joint unit, we went through and as we detailed, it's supposed to just be based on an athlete's performance for the previous year, so not a career-centric award, just what they did that particular year. And so the beginning of the process was we just, all six of us nominated any athlete that we felt might possibly be worthy of being named one of the top 10 UF athletes in the last year. And we got quite a wide variety, as each of us have covered numerous sports. And, you know, we could nominate anyone from any sport, but some sports we probably know better than others. Mm-hmm. But overall, we had 37 athletes nominated, so that was quite a process to whittle that down to 10. From 17 UF sports, if you're sitting at home saying, gee, I wonder how many sports UF has, well, first of all, it's going to be 19 when they add lacrosse in the spring, so don't let that throw you off.
It's going to go from 17 to 19 when they add lacrosse?
Well, no. Ah. It's going to be 19 in the spring. It's 18 right now. We had 17 sports have nominees. The one sport that, unfortunately, this is no vote of disapproval of the program, but the UF soccer team did not get any nominees for top 10 UF athletes.
I find that interesting, though, because they had a good year.
Well, maybe, you know, it's better than the sum of their parts, good team.
That was my fault. They have a couple of good players. I don't think any, there's no one on the team that I think of as, you know, like an exceptional top 10 in the country, or really one of the best in the country.
Right. Well, I remember the thing when I was looking at it, because I went through each sport to try and figure out who I wanted to nominate, even if I'm not necessarily a UF soccer expert. Their big thing the whole year was they couldn't, or they never did decide. It worked out for them, but never decided on one goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, usually in soccer, it's like, for me, for not someone who's known the team really well, it's like, well, I'm going to look for your goalkeeper. Is your goalkeeper really good? Do you have a really good striker? And they didn't have anyone, you know, that was a cut above. They had a couple very good strikers.
Exactly.
They had a very good back line as a whole. Maybe you could have stretched one of them in there, but the truth of it is they probably wouldn't have made the top 10 anyway.
Exactly.
But no nominees from soccer. And then, so those 37 athletes were put on a ballot. That was emailed out, of course, because this is the internet age, and I don't always hate my email. And so the six columnists of the Alligator sat down and ranked their top 10. I don't know how each of us did it. I know that I whittled it down to 10 and then ranked them 1 through 10. Is that what you did, Adam?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. Let's talk a little bit about the process of getting those 10 notes. Like, what weighed heavily for you when you were picking?
So many. Like, it was really weird because what I did is I printed out just the initial ballot. There was, like, some people that, like, I was like, you're automatically in. Like, I'm not going to look for you. Like, I did it kind of like a round by round. I whittled away a few each round.
Yeah.
I tried to feel important or something. And there was a few that I was like, you can just, like, skip to the quarterfinals. Like, you know, I'm not going to deal with you for a couple rounds. So I think, and then, you know, but there was, you know, maybe five of those. And then it was just, well, you know, I don't think these five people are going to make it. I probably cut five, maybe eight the first time.
Yeah.
So now I'm down to, like, 30. You know, and then I look at it again, and for me, you know, it was, I thought that I didn't, I think for sure, I had decided that there was not going to be more than three athletes from one sport, because for me, I didn't feel like the third best athlete of any sport, including the football team, was, or the fourth best player of any sport, including the football team, was better than the best player in any other sport for UF.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it was more about getting a little equal representation as well as, you know, the best athletes. And for me, I valued individual performance. Obviously, that was the highest thing. But then if it came down to sort of a tiebreaker type situation, it was which team had the greater success, especially if that player were a leader on that team and was able to lead their team to a little more success. And the other thing also that was a factor for me, because I know I saw some people on the list maybe who, you know, didn't fit this qualification, but if the team could win without this player, I found them to be a little less valuable. I voted like an MVP voting, more or less, if I want to come from that perspective.
I was going to say, yeah, the debate, in essence, became like just the two schools of thought on an MVP vote.
Yeah.
You know, you could look at it as, can you win without this person? Slightly different, how much does it mean to the team? Because sometimes you can win without someone, but that doesn't mean, yeah, that doesn't mean they're not an integral component.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely took team performance to be a big deal. And, you know, like, to me, as I put in the column for the paper, I valued, you know, if you're a good player or a pretty good player on a team that goes really far,
mm-hmm.
you're probably going to get a bump in my book over a player that might be marginally better. Obviously, there's a big difference.
Yeah.
If you're marginally better, though, and you're on a much worse team, I just can't give you as much credit.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's why I'm saying individual performance, obviously,
right.
was the top. That was the top qualification.
Right, yeah. And, you know, it's really hard, especially because it's, you know, we're not even, you know, weighing MVP-type voting for one sport. You know, it's like, well, how do I compare, you know, a track athlete to a football player to a swimmer, to a softball player? You know, there's just so many debates, and it's all how you weigh different sports and how you weigh different positions in different sports. And to be honest, and I'm speaking for myself, and I'm sure someone else out of the six of us, you know, some of the sports maybe I didn't know enough to necessarily value,
yeah.
but, you know, I tried to get as much information as I could.
Yeah, I felt the same way about them. There were some sports, obviously, in the fall that I wasn't able to follow quite as closely. In the spring, I was able to keep a better watch because I was in the office reading stories about them every night. But, yeah, it was a lot of familiarity, and that's why we had the six people to sort of balance each other out.
Right, yeah, that was a big thing. You know, when me and Adam kind of brainstormed the idea a couple weeks ago. You know, my big thing is, yeah, I didn't want it to be just you and I.
Yeah.
You know, I want to make sure that, you know, because, you know, people call me an idiot, they call you an idiot. We probably are both idiots. But if you get six people, maybe we're all still idiots, but there's enough, like, counterbalancing probably that when you look at the list, and as I said in the paper, we're going to release two names. We're going to do a short little write-up on two of the players, counting down from 10 to 1. So number 10 and number 9 will be in Thursday's Alligator.
Yeah.
I think it counterbalances. When you look at the top 10, maybe the bottom, there's a little bit of questioning, but the rest of them, people are going to go, oh, yeah, maybe I would have had this person up a couple steps or down a couple ranks, but they're going to say, oh, yeah, he or she is probably a top 10 athlete.
Yeah, we've obviously seen the list. I feel very good about it as a whole. In the top 5, like, I feel very good about the top 5.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like we're all going to be pretty much in agreement about the top 5.
Yeah, yeah. There was pretty, you know, it was very interesting. Like, yeah, like the top, I would say, maybe not even the 5, like top to 3 or 4, like, was like, you know, at one level, and then there's a bit of a break. And then, yeah, from about like 8, 9, and 10, we're definitely like people just had much different ideals of what they were going for. The final 10 ended up coming from six of the U.S. sports out of the total 18. As I said earlier, we're obviously not going to tell you what the sports are because that would ruin all the fun. But just know that the top 10 UF athletes from 2008 and 2009 come from six sports.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those, the first two at least, on next week's podcast, and then we'll sort of break them down, you know, in groups as the weeks go on this podcast. Because obviously we'll do pretty detailed stuff in the paper, but this allows for a little bit more discussion of some different parts of their athletic.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I think we can possibly banter a couple more ideas and why each of us had them where they were, or why, you know, wow, this person didn't have this person on their ballot at all. You know, but as we are also going to do, so get excited. If you pick up each day's Alligator, as you did in today's paper. We're going to give you a little teaser in today's Alligator. We gave you just a little hint about, you know, who might be top 10, number 10, and who might be number 9. You want to read that out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Number 10 on our list of top UF athletes comes from a sport without a national title despite an outstanding season by this defensive player. That's number 10. Now our number 9 pick helped turn around a unit many claimed would be UF's weak link. Yeah, nice, I mean, and non-committal there, very general.
I mean, it's just, you know, that you could just describe my life, non-committal. But, you know, the biggest key, you read out those answers, I just want to, you know, I kind of want to respond with a question.
Yeah, it is
style,
a little bit of jeopardy there, yeah absolutely.
You know, so, you know, and maybe for generous, we might throw out, you know, another little hint on the Twitter feed. Ooh. So, you know, if you're not following us on Twitter at twitter.com/alligatorsports, and you're truly missing out.
Yeah, keep them guessing. But also, if you have any feedback about the thing we're talking about running in the paper, we'll talk about it on this podcast, we'll read it and, you know, answer your questions on that. And of course, even on Twitter. We only got 140 characters on Twitter, whereas we have, you know, an hour, however long we want on here. But feel free to send in any feedback you have on the list as a whole, sports@alligator.org, including your top 10, if you feel so inclined.
Absolutely, yeah, completely agree with Adam there. You know, it's slowing down a little bit over the summer, so that's kind of what led us to do this. You know, summer B, as I said, it's the beginning of you get more freshmen on campus, so we're taking a look back. But yeah, give us the feedback. Obviously, it's got to be clean. I don't care if you want to insult me, you want to insult my mother, that's fine, you're an idiot. But I can't print that in the paper.
Yeah.
So if you want to see your stuff printed in the paper or read out loud on this podcast or responded to on Twitter, keep it clean. If we get, you know, several responses, we'll try to do a little mailbag in the paper.
Yeah, and this is, like Phil said, coming in the proud tradition of summer sports contests during the lull period in sports, such as ESPN's Who's More Now and Titletown. And that's the concept that brought you the top 10 UF athletes. You know, just got to fill some space here, and I think it's very interesting. I'm very excited about this. I'm hoping it's something we do in years to come, just a sort of nice retrospective, and then we'll look forward toward the end of the summer.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. When I sat down with that ballot, like, it kind of, like, it brought back just different memories, you know, from the entire year. I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, like, this person, you know, because it's like, you also had to worry about kind of, you know, the way you remember history a little bit. You know, sometimes you have a little bit of revisionist history,
uh-huh.
Or just what's more current.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I'm weighing a spring sport athlete versus a fall sport athlete, well, I just covered a spring sport athlete weeks ago, whereas, you know, a swimmer or a football player, you know, someone from the fall, you know, I haven't heard about them maybe as much, you know, for a couple months.
Yeah, it's true. And we do tend to look up, you know, like if a season ends in a disappointing way, maybe we view that as more recent and
that's
more
very true.
Important. But that's why we try to be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more unbiased, get a little more perspective on the whole thing. But speaking of those memories you were talking about, looking back on the last year, I want to do that right now, looking back on the 08-09 sports year, since we're about to move forward here. What do you, like, you covered football, obviously, you covered the national championship team, then you spent the last, you know, the last spring semester just writing columns and checking out a couple different sports. What to you were some of, like, the highs and the lows? Some best memories, some least favorite memories.
Yeah, as I said to Adam right before the show, when he mentioned we were going to do this segment, the least favorite, it was a little hard to pick. I'm not going to lie. Like, I am a completely unbiased reporter, believe me. They will all attest. But, you know, it was just hard to criticize UF this year. You know, like, I covered the football team. I covered the speech of all things. You know, I spent a week down in Miami, which was a great experience, you know, covering the BCS National Championship game. I mean, there's not a lot of things to dislike about that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, yeah, covering the BCS National Championship, covering the speech, covering a really good team, especially a defense that, you know, was supposed to be not that great, and then it was better, you know, and then you had Tebow, and you had Spikes, and yeah, at Harvard's last year, and who was going to stay and who was going to go. I mean, like, there were so many storylines in the football team. The other thing I have to point to, probably because I covered them from a year ago, is got a chance to cover a couple of UF women's basketball games this year. And they obviously had, you know, in Amanda Butler's second season, an even better season than her first year, making the NCAA tournament, going to the second round, losing to eventual champion Connecticut. But I circled down here, you know, their win over Tennessee at home. You know, only their third time. It was only the third time the Gators had beaten the Volunteers in, you know, countless years that they played, like 20 plus years.
Yeah.
They won 66-57 at home. Deep, you know, pretty big crowd for a women's basketball game here in Gainesville. You know, vaulted them even to the top 10 in the AP rankings. Probably not really deserved. They eventually fell back out of the top 10. They, you know, they remained in the top 25 for all, if not all, most of the season. But, you know, that was just, that's one of those wins that puts your program up a little notch.
Yeah, that was a huge moment for that team. That, to me, was bigger than the NCAA tournament almost when they won the their first round game, correct?
Yeah.
But yeah, that win to me, because it was on ESPN or ESPN2, I believe.
Yeah, I believe it was on ESPN2. Yeah, it was definitely made out to be a big deal, too. Like, it was fun, you know, you run up to the, in the run up to the game, all the UF players are like, you know, it's not anything bigger. You know, Amanda Butler's saying she's not going to coach anything different.
Yeah, sure it was.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. Amanda Butler says, I'm not going to coach anything different. Oh, but by the way, you know, my opposing coach is Pat Summitt, who I looked up to when I was growing up. Yeah. You know, so, like, there was definitely a lot of just interesting storylines there. I think the postseason thing is just, like, trying, because her big thing is expectations, and they want to expect to win, and, you know, so that now, the past 2 years, for probably more than that, they run a little mini holiday tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, the teams that aren't great, but she always talks about just winning the trophy. It's, I believe it's called the State Farm Classic. It's just a 4-team tournament held in Gainesville.
Okay.
You know, a little mini bracket during the holiday break. But she really trusts to her team. You know, that's a little mini tournament. So I think making the tournament was huge this year for this team. Because last year they were on the bubble. They probably could have won their way in if they won on senior day at home. You know, like, they played their way out kind of thing.
Yeah.
So getting in was big. And, yeah, winning a game was big because, you know, at the SEC tournament, they were one and done. They got a bye, but they were one and done. They faced Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But just, I think making the NCAA tournament expectation for the women's hoops team is where Amanda Butler is trying to take the program.
All right, so which one would you say was your fondest memory then, the national championship game?
I actually had written down UF Women's Hoops, so I'll stick by that. Yeah, probably like years, you know, like what am I going to remember 25 years from now? I guess I'll probably tell my kids about the national championship. But like just to see where a team would come, you know, like I feel, you know, the football team, like people kind of had them, you know, they lost to Ole Miss and then it was like they had all these issues and they had some issues with the offense at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, it wasn't so unexpected. You know, the run was amazing. That offensive production, they were like a juggernaut. You know, it was nuts. You know, going to New York City, covering a Heisman, they didn't win. But, I mean, it was just so many moments that, you know, you tell people about, and as a reporter, they're like, oh, you cover the football team. Like, everybody knows what that means. But, you know, after covering the women's basketball team the year prior, knowing them a little bit more, you know, like, knowing their struggles they went through, not that I felt bad for them, but just having seen where they came from,
okay.
It was just a moment that stood out more to me.
All right, I can understand that. I don't necessarily think I would agree with it had I been in your shoes, but I can understand it to some degree. Plus, that's just your irrational love for women's college basketball, I suppose, shining through. My top moments, I honestly don't really know. This is my first year, covering sports for the Alligator here. So I started off on women's cross country, or cross country as a whole. Women's cross country was sort of the team that stood out to me, you know, in terms of covering it. They were a lot more successful. And then I moved on to softball and spent a lot of time in this here office, so there was that. But top moment, it's pretty difficult for me. I always remember the first event I covered was the one home cross country meet they have here in Gainesville. And that to me was sort of like a validation, like I'm here doing the right thing, because I remember Jeremy Crescioni, who turned out to be an All-American, he was great to cover all year. He won, it just blew everybody away. But then the surprise story of the whole day was Genevieve Lacaze, a freshman, you know, fresh into America, came out and won the whole thing, and she was surprised. And with those small sport athletes, the genuine emotion they have when they win is just, like, it's so much more fun to see than people who are just, you know, pretty much paid to do this, and it's their life. Like, you know, you see that happiness that comes on when somebody wins something, you know, for the first time. And that, to me, following that team was very rewarding the whole season, especially throughout when Jeremy Crescioni finished in the top 20, despite he had no prayer of making that realistically when he went in there. And then he was so surprised and so happy. And for somebody who didn't really show a whole lot of emotion throughout the whole season, seeing him actually, like, call me and be like, hey, I just wanted to talk about this, you know, for the Alligator was very exciting. I'd say that was probably actually. I know covering the softball team, I'm probably taking that for granted.
Like, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, going to Women's College World Series had to be pretty cool.
That was absolutely up there. I went out there with Kyle to Oklahoma City, and those whole 8 days were very fun. It was very cool to do, like, the whole just as a reporter thing, because I got so used to here in the spring, you know, you go out, you write a story, you cover a game, you come back into the office, and you edit everybody else's story. But, yeah, the whole softball season was very rewarding as well. Specifically, if I had to pick a high, definitely the Women's College World Series.
Yeah, based on that, I mean, you said just a year and it was only two beats. Do you have a least favorite memory, or was there a stretch in either sport where, you know, maybe you were like, wow, they're kind of not doing as well as they should be?
I have two, I guess. The one would actually be related to cross country. When I was doing that, there was a meet. It was in between, like, a pretty big meet for the team, something out of the Notre Dame meet, and then the pre-NCAA Invitational. And there was a meet the week in between that. So Coach Todd Morgan sent basically none of his best runners.
Right.
But I still had to, you know, I still covered it like it was a real meet and it mattered and something. You know, I sat down and I did these interviews with these people and, like, I just felt awkward talking to everybody and, like, you know, so, meet coming up. And I didn't know how to treat that with them. Like,
right.
You're not the top runners. Nobody really cares how you do in this race.
Right.
That to me was just kind of like a, why am I doing this moment?
Sure.
But then otherwise, while you were down in Miami living the high life, covering the national championship game, I was here in this office running the show for a very long week.
South Beach said hello to you.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I'm sure the penthouse suite said hello while I was in here with no air conditioning or anything. But yeah, that was my first week as assistant sports editor. I had no idea what was going on, basically. And Evan Drexler, obviously the former sports editor, had prepared me fairly well, but he was down in Miami with you covering the thing. And then our first night here, all these stories coming in. You guys wrote really good stories that night. I remember I was very proud of the paper we were going to put out, and the power goes out. The server shuts down. So we're sitting here until like 3 in the morning trying to put out a paper, and that to me, like, that was maybe the worst moment of the spring semester, and it happened the first night back. Other than that, I'd say it was the night of the national championship game while you guys were covering it, and everybody else in Gainesville was enjoying it, and I was running around, stressing out and yelling at people in the office, trying to get a paper out.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. I remember I was here in the office the night of the national the second basketball national championship, when they went back-to-backs. I was in the office helping out that night. It's just working in the office, like, we're not saying pity us or anything like that, because
no.
We really love what we do.
Absolutely.
But you don't really watch the game. You're just kind of like watching the game, waiting for stories. I remember, like, talking to people about the basketball game the next day, and I couldn't even remember some of the things that happened because I wasn't really watching it. It was like, I was just watching it for work. It's like when you have to read a book for school.
Yeah.
It's like, this might be a really good book, but I don't get to enjoy it as much because I have to do all this work with it.
Yeah. And that was especially true of the second half because, you know, that's when you start to worry. And, you know, I was calling you guys and emailing you guys just panicked. Like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it because that game was... That first quarter took like an hour and a half, it felt like, when it was being played.
That national championship game was something else, because it was a great experience for me, because I was very happy I got a chance to write the front page story for that, which, as it hasn't been presented here before, I sent in my copy with a misspelled name. But that was an interesting stress because I was writing and rewriting and sending, and you guys were obviously trying to put together an entire thing, and I'm just trying to get the best possible copy because I know I'm writing on the front page and it's running the big picture.
Yeah.
And now it turns out a copy of it's up on the wall in Gator Dog's, a restaurant here in Gainesville. So
the prestigious wall.
I do feel a little bit important. It is really cool. Because it's one of those, like, because every student reads football stories, and it was the front page, and so everybody read it, and, you know, it was a very, very neat moment.
Yeah, and covering that as a whole for the paper, I think, was one of the high moments for us this year, and you have to certainly view the national championship as the top moment for maybe UF as a whole, absolutely, for the sports program this year. What else do you think is up there in terms of... That's awesome in school. You had 12 top 10 finishes, which ties a school record.
Yeah, it's just it's really hard because, like, for people, for many UF fans, like, they're just so weighted based on how big the sport is.
Yeah.
You know, like so football was above and beyond, and we would agree, but to, like, people outside, that's probably all they will remember about this UF athletic year.
Yeah, and you look at the football season alone, though, and there were so many things that happened in that. Yeah. You think about the win over Georgia, like, you know, they just stomped him, and then Meyer called the timeouts there, and the last thing, just to rub it in, you talk about the SEC championship where they won without Harbin, the freaking promise that is now up on the walls of the swamp, like the Ten Commandments. And, you know, obviously the national championship game. That season alone was riddled with just so many great moments.
Yeah, it really was. It's almost like, I'm sure someone is, if it hasn't been published already. Yeah, it was just really made for a book. Like, if you really could have, like, been a fly on the wall for that, yeah, whatever long it was, 5 months, or even from the preseason, I'm sure there's even more great stories. You know, I'm sure there's moments of Tebow, you know, uttering his promise and then getting on his teammates, you know, for the next 6 months. And, you know, they tell us some of those things, but it's not really about telling us. It's about the team being ready to go, and it's kind of, you know, it's locker room atmosphere and all that. It's great. But, I'm sure there was moments where they were pushing. I'm sure, you know, even the description, I'll never forget the description from Percy Harvin and the trainer and Urban when he couldn't play in the SEC championship, because that was not really said before the game.
Yeah.
He was kind of questionable, and we all kind of doubted it. But if you believe what they say, he really, really wanted to go. And there was apparently a moment, like, you know, with Harvin crying on the trainer's table when the trainer told him he could not play, you know, hours before the game, or it may have been the night before the game. Mm. And just that, and, you know, and then winning the game, and then him playing on that ankle, you know, in Miami, having all the Florida fans in Miami. I mean, and then, you know, Tebow, the celebration saying he's going to come back.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a whole saga, make a movie out of it. You know, I mean, it was a big moment of the year.
You forget about that moment when he said he was going to come back. I'm sure Harrison Dine would kill us for not remembering that in every proud detail. But you forget about that. People legitimately had no idea, like, what was gonna happen when he stepped up on the stage.
I do remember, like, it had always been kind of the thought that he was always going to stay up until about a couple months, not even a couple months, a couple weeks right before that last game. There was a big kind of like rise in opinion kind of among reporters and just things you hear here and there that he was possibly going. And like, I remember all the way up until the championship game, I was like, he's coming back. And then he won the week going up to the celebration. I was like, oh, maybe he's not going to come back. That celebration, first of all, like, they just got to fix those.
Oh, that was a joke.
That was painful to sit through. I know I'm not a fan. It's not for me. Yeah. But, like, covering that made me want to pull my hair out. Like, you know, and Tebow came back. So it'd probably be really funny. If you ask any UF fan, all they will remember is probably Tebow coming back and not the 90 minutes of the Pouncey brothers and other football players trying to interview other football players. And I can't get his name. There was a former UF football player that came back and just talked. I couldn't tell you about what. It was really painful.
Who was like the gospel choir singer or the preacher or somebody came up and led the team?
Yeah,
and the
he was
crowd
like,
and song.
Apparently they had done that all year. I mean, that wasn't even that bad when I tell you that wasn't even the worst part of that.
Hey, it was just bizarre to think back on that.
It really was bizarre. When I go back to think about my least favorite, or probably the, not the worst part of UF over the year, but the thing that I saw that probably stands out and fans are disappointed, is just the end of the men's basketball season. I mean, like, I covered them, you know, I covered a game here and there, obviously followed them the entire season, wrote some columns, but covered them, was at the SEC tournament, the entire time they were there, covered the NIT games, and it just really, you know, you just could never really figure out what was going on. You know, they beat Kentucky on the last day of the regular season at home in a game they kind of have to have when Kentucky's thought to be good. They were fighting to get into the tournament. They go down to Tampa. You know, the SEC tournament's only 150 miles away, so you got plenty of fan support. And then they play in Tampa. They beat up Arkansas. You think the Gators are playing well. Then they lose to Auburn the next night. You got people, Urban Walker, missing a three at the buzzer. A terrible breakdown. Nick Calathes, in his last four games, I don't know what happened. I still think an alien took his body or something. Or I mean, no disrespect to Nick. He had a great season. he was probably really just hurt and tired. You know, like, I would probably try to fatigue the most.
I'd say he's a little sore from carrying his team on his back the whole year.
You could say that. I mean, and maybe, you know, there was some rife between him and Donovan.
Yeah.
You know, he sat him at the end of that Mississippi State game. Yeah, there's just a lot of issues. Probably was not a real happy-go-lucky locker room.
No.
But, yeah, that just kind of stands out. And, you know, and then it's that NIT. It's like they always regroup and make a little run, you know, beat Jacksonville, Miami. Miami didn't play very well at all in that game. And then they lose to Penn State to try to go back to the NIT Final Four. There's some men's hoops just almost the season as a whole. It's just like they didn't live up to, like, potential. Yeah. You know, like, I predicted them not to make the NCAA tournament, but it was not based on talent. It was just based, you know, there wasn't that feeling that, like, they really knew how to win. I think Nikolaitis is going to be he'll be a good pro. I don't think he'll be a great pro. I'm a little cooler on him than some of our other writers. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, it was funny. I wasn't even really trying to stick it in anyone's face. I just really felt like they weren't going to make it, you know, like, and everybody's like, how could they not be, you know, not get one of the 3-4 at-large bids? But at the same time, I was like, why are they going to? Like, each game, it would be like, you'd see and you'd be like, oh, there's a little flash of why they should be really good. And then there's like 20 minutes where they just play awful.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to wonder what you chalk that up to. They're certainly, obviously, they weren't as talented as they were, you know, back in the day, even when they were making the NCAA tournament, not necessarily winning the championships. But even when they were in the tournament, maybe the teams weren't quite that talented. I think a little bit of it has to go in terms of the coaching not being as strong as it has been, or as strong as it could be, or strong especially as it needed to be.
I could certainly agree with that. I don't, honestly, it's one of those things, like, I think I wrote this comment at the end of the year, and I just said, I don't know. Like, you know, I watched the team play 36 games, and at the end of 36 games, I don't know how much more I knew than compared to the beginning. Mm-hmm. I actually firmly remember I was sitting inside the St. Pete Times Forum, I think either before the beginning of the SEC tournament or after the first game, and I just sat there and I, you know, because there were so many storylines. There was, maybe they're not good because of this, maybe it's Billy, maybe it's Nick, maybe it's Alex, maybe it's defense, maybe it's three-point shooting, maybe it's Chandler Parsons. Like, everybody had an idea as to why they weren't good.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was probably, honestly, a little bit of each, you know, and not good chemistry.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was just like, they're just not good enough. Like nothing was getting fixed. There was no, like, small fix, and they could say whatever they wanted, but it was just like, you just knew they were, like, you know, 5 minutes left, you know, like, they need to win against Auburn. I was like, they're going to lose this game.
There was also no progression. If anything, there was a collapse.
Yeah, it was really, like, as I said, like, 36 games later, I didn't feel like I knew anything more. I mean, they played Syracuse within 6 points in November, and everybody's like, oh, this team's not going to be as good. Expectation went too high there,
because
then they'd be Washington, and then, you know, and then everybody thinks they're great, and they only lost FSU by 2 points. That was an NCAA tournament team.
Yeah.
I don't know, 5 seed.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a team they should be in.
I mean, but I'm just saying, like, but the expectations went well too high, and then it's like the normal UF basketball progression. They don't play anyone in the non-conference, so they have this ridiculous record. They go in SEC play. They can't really win on the road. Then they can win on the road. They can't win at home. They can't beat people they should beat. They beat people they shouldn't beat.
Yeah.
You really just don't know what's going on.
It's a big question mark. And now we're going to talk about some question marks they'll have going into next year with the loss of Kalathis, which we just mentioned. But before we do that, Kalathis was drafted in Thursday's NBA draft. He was the 4th point guard picked by the Minnesota Timberwolves, which was unbelievable, by the way, to watch that progress. I was at the Rays game, and I missed my beloved NBA draft, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. And just seeing the T-Wolves' progression as they were picking, I was like, oh, Ricky Rubio. Huh, Johnny Flynn, another point guard. Huh, Ty Lawson, he also plays point guard. And then, oh, Nikolaitis. And by that point, I was just like, I was incredulous. I was throwing my arms up in the air, you know, wondering what the T-Wolves were doing with their draft. But as it turns out, they traded Lawson, and then they traded the rights to Kalathis, who will obviously be playing in Greece. They traded his rights to the Dallas Mavericks. Whether or not he'll train under Jason Kidd if he re-signs with the Mavs, I think is a fairly exciting prospect for him, but it depends on how long he stays in Greece and how long if Jason Kidd goes back to Dallas.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting factor. As I don't know if you just said he's the Mavericks would have to pay $500,000 to bring Kalathis over after this season.
Yeah.
And yeah, the reports, I mean, obviously we don't have many NBA sources. The reports right now are Jason Kidd possibly going to the Knicks to play with D'Antoni. And then that, you would think maybe almost they want to keep Kidd another year and then bring Kalathis in. Like, it looks like Kalathis might be the guy in a year, unless they're trading for, I couldn't even tell you, he plays point guard for the Knicks. But, yeah, I think he's going to be, the Dallas is not a bad situation.
No.
I mean, like, playing with Dirk Nowitzki, I mean, that could be, you know, but who even knows? Because if Knicks, what if Knicks stays over 2 years and they trade his rights again?
Exactly.
Yeah, there's so many things that can happen. I don't think, you know, Knicks buying a house in Dallas or anything.
No, I don't think so. And I think, I mean, he's got to be very happy, though, that his NBA future is in place should he decide to come back over, which I think we both think he will.
Sure.
Once either that contract's up or once somebody decides to buy him out. So
I think that's
that
his goal for sure, obviously,
yeah,
to play in the NBA.
And I think personally that this Greece move helped his, maybe, I mean, it hurt his draft stock, but I think it's going to help his stock as a pro, because I think he will improve over there a little bit. He'll come back. He won't have quite the expectations on him, I think, if he's not going to have to be drafted like a Brandon Jennings type was in this draft coming over from Europe. But I think it's overall a very positive move, as did associate head coach Larry Scheid, who was very happy. I believe he said he's in pretty good shape, quote, financially. That's after signing a contract that could be worth up to $3.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, from the money sense, Kalathis obviously, you know, he's got a good contract over there in Greece, and he has the Greek heritage. And, you know, I've kind of sprouted off and said I didn't think it was a good idea. By this point, I'm just like, we'll just see what happens. You know, like, I don't think it bettered him to go to Greece. I think he should have stayed and played in the NBA. But the truth of it is, it's kind of like, all right, it happened. You know, we'll see what happens. See what he does in Greece. You know, Brandon Jennings. Now, I'm not saying Kalathis is Brandon Jennings.
No.
Brandon Jennings obviously went overseas rather than come play in college for a year and then was drafted.
Yeah.
And didn't really see very much time overseas. You know, like, I don't think that's necessarily a deal because the Greek team, the pro team that Kalathis is playing for, obviously has a little bit more idea of what Nick can do. Nick played in college for 2 years. But, you know, I'm just not sold that, like, because I think there's just a bit of a gap between the overseas game and the NBA game. And so now Nick's coming over here when he's probably, I don't know, 22, 23 if he stays 2 years. And then he's got to, you know, pick up with whoever he is. He doesn't have any guaranteed money, because he was a second-round pick. Obviously, he has this money from when he was in Greek, so he's not going to be hurting for cash, necessarily. But I'm just not sold that, you know, like, I don't think the Mavericks are like, man, we're really going to base our future on, like, Nick Kalathis coming back in the or any team. So, like, he'll be able to fight for a job, and there won't be expectations, but, like, I think his battle for a job is going to be tougher than some people think.
See, I was just going to say that I feel like he did a very good job for himself. I don't know if it's necessarily the best in terms of his basketball ability, but securing security, yeah, is what I'm trying to say there. Financial security and eventually job security, because he's going to have two options. You know, if he gets bought out of this contract expires, he could keep playing in Europe or he could come back over to America. And either way, I think he's pretty well set in terms of money. I don't know about in terms of his career and his skill and how he's going to develop, but that's all yet to be seen. Also yet to be seen is how this year's basketball team is going to recover without him. As I said, Larry Scheid was on a SEC summer men's basketball teleconference. Billy Donovan was in travel and not able to make it to the teleconference, which it seems like a very ironic, you know, concept. Can't make it to a conference on the phone, but like I said, he was traveling. But Scheid had a lot of interesting stuff to say about them next year. He was very, very honest about the fact that Kalathis leaving leaves a huge hole in their offense and in their backcourt. You know, just on the team as a whole, because how do you lose your top scorer, your top assist man? Irving Walker is the only true point guard on the team. He's undersized, and, you know, he's not going to lead your team. You know, he's not going to lead your team in scoring. I hope not, at least. So, yeah, I respected that Scheid was very honest about that, and he, at times, seemed desperate for a point guard. He kept mentioning how they need a point guard for the 2010 recruiting class.
Yeah, I think this is a subject we're definitely going to be revisiting as we watch the 2009-2010 men's basketball team. I think, like, the critical mistake was just not getting another point guard in the recruiting.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I know I'm sure they tried hard. They didn't get John Wall. They didn't get
Momo.
Yeah, they couldn't get Momo, who was originally a USC commit and then eventually committed to Arizona.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was almost to a point where you just needed to get another point guard on your roster. Like, you don't need a 5-star guy. You need a 3-star guy. I mean, like, a walk-on, I mean, I'm sure they'll get some kind of depth, but, like, you don't want to walk. Like, is a walk-on going to be your backup point guard? Yeah, can Kenny Boyden, is he probably going to be the de facto backup point guard because he's going to slide from 2 to 1? Yeah, sure. But
at that
point,
you're relying on Kenny Boyden to play 40 minutes a game, though,
right?
Aren't you?
Like, yeah, well, yeah, or else he would have to, Irving would have to come back in when Kenny sat, at least, for sure.
Yeah, well, I guess if they have somebody else to slide in at the two guard there, because you got to figure Boyden's going to be the starting two, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would assume, I mean, they're just...
They're in trouble.
I mean, Ray Shipman has to get an offensive game.
That's true, they could throw Shipman in there.
You know...
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to see unfold, but Shai was very positive about the front court depth they have in terms of Macklin coming in, Tyus getting able to play what Shai described as a more natural position at the four. I think we all agree that that's going to be a very positive move for Tyus. I think that's going to, you'll see a lot more production out of him at the four. He said, you know, Dan Werner, which Lord knows Dan Werner's about to be a 3-year starter at the University of Florida. You know, Vernon Mack and Kenny Cagey. He mentioned Eloy Vargas, whether or not he sees the light of day on the floor, I don't know. But he was very positive about that. He says that gives them a lot more options in terms of what they can do on defense, especially. He mentioned pressing more, playing more man-to-man, both of which I think are great moves for this team next year.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. The problem that I see forthcoming with the front court, it's just it might be a quantity versus quality debate. They're going to have bodies. That's great. This year they didn't have bodies. So, like, you can't have quality sometimes without, you know, like, even if you have quality without quantity, that's not going to do you all that well because you guys are going to get tired, etc.
Yeah.
This year they didn't have any bodies. They weren't even all that great.
No,
Tyus out of position.
Yeah, this year they had neither.
They had neither, exactly. You know, this year they're going to have guys, but, you know, Tyus, do I think Tyus is going to do a lot better to the four? Absolutely. The big question mark, as we've all kind of been saying, is Georgetown transfer Vernon Macklin. I mean, if he can be a legitimate, big-time post player, you know, like really match up with the SEC big post guys, they could be very good, but I think that's going to be a big question mark.
I don't know how great he needs to be. He doesn't need to score 20 points a game, I don't think, because I think Boyden and Tyus now will be freed up to do a little more versatile scoring, I think. But if Macklin can just get in there, rebound, block a couple of shots, and just be physical, physically altercate, as Billy Donovan would say, that's all he needs to do.
Yeah, see, I'm not convinced. Like, will Tyus be a bigger offensive presence than the four? Absolutely. Kenny Boyden, is he going to be great? Do I think maybe he could average 15, 20 points a game? Yeah, but there's going to be nights he's probably going to be off because he's a freshman. There's going to be nights when somebody can shut him down. And I just think, like, Tyus, to me, we'll see what his game is like at the four.
Yeah.
I don't think he's not going to be a back-to-the-basket, you know, post guy. That's not what he wants to be. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I just, like, his jump shot, it's better than you always think it's going to be. It goes in a little bit more than you expect almost. But I just don't know if that's quite reliable enough. Tyus in transition, it's going to be great. Like, at the four, fill in, they'll run. Hopefully Macklin can run up and down the floor. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
But I just think that Macklin has to be a double-digit scoring guy if they want to be really good.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's obviously going to help him go further. But I think they can get by if he's scoring 8-10 points a game. You clearly don't.
I just think it's a stretch. I mean, we'll see. Now, if Kenny Cagey is a really good off-the-bench big guy, then I think that helps you out. You know, like, we saw Cagey have moments of being really good. He's 6'10".
I don't know about really good. I never saw Kenny Cagey look really good.
I saw, like, 2-minute stretches.
Oh, well, maybe, sure. But then he got tired after those 2 minutes, and he stopped catching the ball.
Well, right. I mean, you would hope that you work on your conditioning a little bit more there, Ken.
Maybe your hands as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I firmly disagree with putting Werner back at the three, absolutely. I think he's a great banger in the post, and I think you shouldn't start. I think starting five should be Irving Walker, Kenny Boyden, Chandler Parsons, Alex Tyus, and Vernon Macklin.
Yeah, I think we agree.
Yeah, no, I will not listen to anyone else who tells me differently, probably, even though I could be completely wrong, and I don't know that Billy will do that.
Right.
I think he might start Dan Werner, which I think would be a huge mistake.
No, I absolutely think he's going to start Dan Werner. It's not like nothing he said or anything. That's just sort of a gut feeling. And the fact that he kept starting him this year as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's a gutty guy. He would be he would be even better if he, I think he might even be a better first big man off the bench. He, you know, he's only 6'8", so he's 2 inches shorter than Kenny Cagey, but he just bangs, he gets rebounds, he's gutty. That's kind of what you want with, like, a backup post player. That's not necessarily what you want from someone who's starting at the four.
Obviously not your starting three.
Well, right, yeah, and, like, and the thing is, like, obviously the three was once upon a time Dan's, you know, it was his position. That's what he played in high school. That's what he was supposed to come play here.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you just, like, forget how to play the three, but after playing down low for so long, you know, and using him down there, I don't think he's going to be as successful up there. I really think Chandler Parsons just needs to be good at the three.
I agree. But you know what Dan Warner was very successful as?
What?
The eighth man on a team. And I would agree that that's probably his peak, I would say.
On that team, yeah. If you had a team, there's no way he's, like, you know, the eighth best guy on this team. But, yeah, it would be great if he's the eighth, if he's your eighth best guy, you have a really good team.
That's what I'm saying. But if he's your fourth or fifth best guy, I don't know how good your team is. So, you know, Chandler Parsons absolutely, like you said, needs to step up. He really just needs to be consistent. He would have great moments last year, like that Vanderbilt game, that Vanderbilt where he just lit the house on fire in terms of his shooting. But then he would just not show up, and he would score 2 points and, you know, get benched for a lot of the game. You play 10 minutes some games, and you cannot have that from somebody who is that athletic. And I think he's going to be a big part in terms of this pressing and playing man-to-man. His, you know, I hate saying it because I sound like an NBA draft analyst, but he's very long. He's very athletic. He's, you know, he's got length. He's got wingspan. He can do that. He can change some things up in the front court in terms of the press.
Yeah, as you said, like, he definitely, like, that's what we keep hearing, that he has this body and has this potential. And, you know, at some point, just like, all right, you know, like, show me what you got, kind of thing. And he has, as you said, he's had glimpses, but for them to reach their peak, well, obviously, but for them to be really good, I just think, really, he's got to be a legit every night starter at the three. Does he have to go off for 20 points? No.
No.
Can he be a... Maybe some games he just needs 6 or 8 points, but he's not a detriment out there. Like, his length can help on defense. Whatever kind of defense they want to run, I think it'd be great if they can press. They can run people up and down the floor. That's a way to even out mismatches between underdogs and favorites. It's been shown, who I believe it was Malcolm Gladwell, had that article in the New Yorker talking about this. When you have like a David Goliath type situation, we're not saying UF's going to be, you know, David against a whole bunch of teams. But, you know, it's going to help them out if you can run up and down the floor. It just kind of evens out the game a little bit.
Yeah, that Malcolm Gladwell piece. Great, by the way. I would highly recommend reading that if you're interested in sort of getting a little bit more perspective on what we're talking about, especially in terms of the press. All right, we're going to move on into our two-minute warning segment where we take a couple of different topics and we break them down really quick, just back and forth, a little PTI-style discussion, 2 minutes on each topic. We're going to talk about the ESPYs, a couple of Gators nominated for that, 7 baseball players signing MLB contracts, a little about the UF volleyball schedule, and just the last week in pro sports in general since we rambled on about pro sports last week's podcast. So, Phil, start the timer for that ridiculous truck horn, train horn you got going here.
Here we go.
All right, let's talk about the ESPYs. ESPN's a big award show out in Los Angeles. Phil, you got the list of Florida-related nominees here?
Yeah, it really just comes down to Tim Tebow here. These awards, the show's taped July 15th. It's going to air July 19th. Tebow was nominated for 2 awards. The first is for Best Male College Athlete, of which he's up against Sam Bradford, the Oklahoma football player, Matt Gilroy, a Boston University hockey player, Blake Griffin, the Oklahoma men's basketball player, and Steven Strasburg, the San Diego State baseball pitcher. And his other nomination is for Best Moment for his speech after U.S. football loss to Ole Miss. And this is a more interesting category, definitely, for me. He's up against 2 other things, first of which, I hope I get this name right, Helio Castroneves.
Castroneves, yeah.
Castroneves winning the Indy 500 after all of his tax evasion trial, and the U.S. men's swim team winning the 4x100-meter relay at the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing, which was, of course, one of Michael Phelps' 8 gold medals.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to win the athlete one, honestly. I could see them giving that to Blake Griffin. I mean, I Tebow might deserve it. Obviously, because he took his team to the national
championship. That one's, like a toss-up. Like, and Bradford technically won the Heisman.
Yeah.
I know nothing about Matt Gilroy, Smith. Like,
I'm
going to
say
player.
Count him out, actually.
You guess. But a lot of people like Steven Strasburg, too.
He was a big story for ESPN.
100 miles an hour. Yeah, he's on ESPN.
I say just go ahead and give him the moment, ESPY, though.
See, and I completely disagree. I actually couldn't disagree more. I think the U.S. swim team's 4x100-meter relay, that was like
.00001. Yeah, it was the finger, yeah.
Yeah, that was 10 million times more exciting than Tebow's speech. I really like Tebow's speech, But the U.S. swim team's relay was ridiculous.
I just think the speech has been hyped up to the degree that it will get it whether we like it or not, and it will still be remembered. It'll be like Ten Commandments on the wall of the swamp.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah. Nice timing. All right, so let's move on here. Start the timer again. Seven UF former baseball players signed Major League Baseball contracts this last week. Phil, you got the list once again there.
Here we go. We'll run them down here. Three of the UF baseball team's seniors, so they had graduated. Now they'll be moving on.
Sure.
You've got outfielder Avery Barnes signing with the Colorado Rockies. Right-handed pitcher Patrick Keating signing with the Kansas City Royals. And left-handed pitcher Stephen Locke signing with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Then you had four former Gators who were drafted and will forego the rest of their eligibility. Mm-hmm. And you had right-handed pitcher Billy Bullock, left-handed pitcher Tony Davis, and catcher Buddy Monroe. Those three all signed with the Minnesota Twins. Mm-hmm. And then you had shortstop Mike Mooney, who signed with the Baltimore Orioles. Tell me, Adam, out of those seven, I bet I know, but which one surprised you the most?
Mike Mooney. Absolutely Mike Mooney. I wouldn't pick Mike Mooney to be the starting shortstop on a lot of college baseball teams just because he's a defensive liability a lot of the times. So for the Orioles to just like sign him away, Mike Mooney had to jump at that chance.
Yeah, I can't even believe that. I think he's drafted in what, like the 25th round or something?
I think maybe even lower than that.
Yeah, maybe worse. But I mean, like, I only cover baseball team a couple games, I understand, like mostly toward the postseason though, when they should have been at their best possibly. He was usually, if I'm not mistaken, the number 9 hitter.
Yeah.
Not a great hitter. A defensive liability. Routine ground balls to short were never routine. I can't possibly fathom how Mike Mooney has pro prospects.
You gotta be excited for those three who signed together with the all three of them with the Twins. That's gotta be interesting for them.
Yeah, that was fascinating. I really had, like, I was like, wait, did I get this wrong? Like, I was looking it up, and then sure enough, all three were with the Minnesota Twins. And interesting that four of the seven guys were leaving early. Buddy Monroe, I know Kyle was big on, definitely
yeah.
Stepping up midway through the season. And Teddy Foster, another catcher, graduated, so that'll be an interesting
Real
thing
quick, which one has the best pro career?
Billy Bullock.
There you go. Oh, nice, double horn there. All right, now we're going to move on to our third one. We're going to talk about the UF volleyball schedule. They just unveiled the schedule for this 2009 season, which will start this fall. Phil, you got some more information?
I got some more info to bring the heat here today. UF volleyball schedule was released.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting. They will face five opponents from the 2008 NCAA tournament. Obviously not necessarily a whole lot, but it was really fascinating. And, you know, because they don't always play the toughest non-conference schedule, especially early in the season. The opening weekend, I want to say it's probably Labor Day weekend, they're going out to California, to Stockton, California. And on Friday, September the 4th at 8 p.m., in the 31st annual Community Bankers Classic.
Man, I got 2 minutes.
Yeah, I know. They're facing off with Stanford, who was a national runner-up in 2008, lost 3-0, but undefeated back-to-back national champion Penn State.
Yeah.
So that was fathomable. The big thing, though, and again, you know, you can throw out that they have the nation's longest streak of 25-win seasons, 18 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's more of a testament to who they don't really play.
Yeah.
But the most fascinating thing about me is, to me, anyway.
About Phil.
Yeah, not about me.
That's for another
time. I don't know if they have the team, but this, of all years, would be their best shot logistically to win a national title, because they could win the national championship likely out leaving Florida.
Yeah, because it's in Tampa this year, and they'll be playing in that Tampa Twice tournament, I think September 11th down there, because it's, you know, it's all for teams looking to make it back to the Final Four there later on in the season. But also, they're playing Washington, who was ranked number 5 at the end of last year. I'm just going to say, there's a chance I'll probably be covering volleyball come the fall. Both sports I've covered for the Alligator, Washington has won a national championship. If you're going to Vegas, and I don't condone gambling or anything, but I might put a little bit of money on Washington's volleyball team. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know who's taking lines on NCAA volleyball championships,
there's
but
somebody,
if you find someone,
people
definitely get them.
Bets on NCAA football right now. Florida's 2-1 odds.
It'd be remarkable if they can win the first and second rounds here in Gainesville. They host a regional, and then they have the Final Four. It's a really good setup for Florida.
Absolutely. So look forward to that. We'll definitely be talking about that more as the season approaches. And then our last one, like I said, last week on the podcast, we rambled a bit talking about the summer and pro sports. We're going to do that a little bit more right now. I'm going to start off with the NBA draft, since, as I've said, I used to love the NBA draft. This year, I actually enjoyed it a little more than I would after I wrote that column saying, you know, I've lost all enjoyment from the NBA draft, but this one I liked because it was a little bit more unpredictable. All the trades were there leading up to it. The NBA offseason is so exciting to me. All the trades, the free agency is very exciting. But the draft was better. But the thing that cracked me up the most about that was after the draft, all the analysts who were, you know, they do their best to predict it leading into the draft, they said, well, we were right. The draft was unpredictable. So, like, they were trying to crown themselves for not, you know, for saying it was unpredictable, you know, predicting that it would be unpredictable, which is absurd to me. But overall, I got to say, after I was so down on the NBA draft last week, I very much enjoyed this one.
And I was very happy that I didn't have to watch any of the NBA draft, because I was happily at the Rays game, as you were at.
I was actually at it, yeah. Yeah. I just enjoyed the post-coverage. Maybe that was why.
Yeah, maybe, but I definitely made sure not to cover any of it, catch any of it on my phone. I was very thankful to follow the Rays in their victory. My best non-U.S. sports moment of the last week was definitely the United States soccer matches playing in the Confederations Cup final. Mm-hmm. Especially that semifinal, I got to watch that in its entirety.
Wow.
I don't actually remember the last time. I don't watch many soccer matches in their entirety, but right. I really like international soccer. It's a lot easier to kind of associate yourself, obviously, with a nation than necessarily a club team in the Champions League or something. But that win over Spain in the semifinals, just great. I mean, you know, I don't probably enjoy soccer as much as somebody who's played soccer forever or someone who's a wall-to-wall soccer fan. But, you know, I know some of the national team members. You know, I've seen them before. I didn't get to catch the final, unfortunately. I know I'm a terrible fan, but I just had stuff to do.
Yeah, I caught the second half, which was something of a disappointment. I didn't catch the first half, you know, in the U.S.
Of the final?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really disappointing. When the U.S. it's all your fault they lost.
Yeah, when they played the brains out and got up to a 2-0 lead. I saw the second half where the Real scored 4 goals. Good times. All right, and with that, we are ready to move on to our weekly awards. We're going to give out our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and our Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week, which we take on one good thing and one bad thing we saw in the last week of sports. Phil, I'm going to let you start with your Reggie.
All right, sounds good. I kind of just alluded to this, so fine by kicking me first here. I'm giving it to the U.S. soccer team. It was their first ever final in a FIFA-sponsored tournament. And they really challenged Brazil. I mean, they lost 3-0 to Brazil in group play, and then they came back, and they were up 2-0 at halftime. And I'm sure, you know, Brazil's a great team, number 5 in the world, and, you know, they won more titles than, you know, many other international teams. But to be up 2-0 at halftime, and they didn't hold on, but the experience, it's going to help them in the 2010 World Cup.
So you're viewing this as a positive thing?
I think you absolutely have to. I don't follow them day-to-day, so I don't know if... But there's no way you could say that they didn't meet expectations. Yeah, did they sneak into getting there? I could not believe that they advanced to the semifinals because I caught parts of the first two matches against in group play against Italy and Brazil. Both losses, didn't play very well.
Yeah.
And I remember I was talking to my roommate and I was like, oh, the U.S. is 0-2, like the top two teams move on. I'm like, oh, the last match, U.S. faces Egypt and Italy faces Brazil. And I talked to him, I was like, looking at the possibilities, I was like, man, like, U.S. would have to do something remarkable, win big, and Italy would have to lose big. I can't even see that because Italy's a really good team and they're playing for a chance to move on. I couldn't fathom the idea that U.S. would move on. And then I saw it come over the ticker on ESPN and on SportsCenter, and it was crazy. And then... But what they really did well is they really took advantage of that opportunity. You know, a lot of people might have said they didn't deserve to be there. And if they lost, you know, 2-0, 3-0 to Spain, then people would have been like, oh, yeah, they did stink.
Yeah.
You know, but they made it and they beat Spain. And it's the number one team in the world. And is it a World Cup? No, it's not a World Cup. So it's, you know, obviously World Cup is, you know, the end-all international soccer. Still a big win. It's their first FIFA final. Yeah. It's just a stepping stone to further success.
Yeah, that's the thing to me is that it's not disappointing when you shouldn't have been there in the first place. I'd say that's sort of my opinion on why it's not a disappointment. It is a learning experience. It was obviously a very big moment for U.S. soccer as a whole. I think they gained a lot of new support. Hopefully that will hold up for the World Cup come 2010. I'll lead off with my Reggie as well. I had several things. This is a good week, and as you'll see later, it was also a bad week. I could have given my Reggie Nelson to the Rays, who have now won 6 straight games. Maybe 7, or maybe a 1-game losing streak, if you're listening to this Wednesday. We're recording here on Tuesday night before they play. You got something about the Rays?
I'm just going to say, I found this stat the other day. I was kind of surprised. It made me feel better about being a Rays fan. They are the They have the best record in the American League since April 30th. Yeah. So we didn't get off to a great start, yeah. But now we're the hottest team in the AL.
Yeah, definitely. And then the other two I could have gone with the NBA offseason, which, as I said, is exciting. It's probably the best offseason in sports as far as I'm concerned.
Free agency just starts tomorrow.
Yeah. And then the trades, which all happened before the draft, were all very exciting. May not have agreed with them all, but they're all still cool. It's cool to see people, not afraid to kick some stuff around, even if it is for financial reasons or trying to save money. But it's very cool to see teams taking risks and moving players who, they would like to stick with, but, it's time to abandon ship and just, start something different. And also, I could have gone to U.S. soccer as well. That was my third alternative. But I'm going to go with something a little more local, a little more relevant here. Give mine to Larry Scheidt, the associate head coach of the University of Florida men's basketball team. He, as I said, he was thrust into the spotlight to do the teleconference when Billy Donovan couldn't make it. And I don't know if I've ever seen a coach be quite so honest with the media when he really didn't even need to be. It's the middle of the summer. Like, who really cares what you're having to say about the men's basketball team right now?
Right.
But he was completely honest about losing Nick Calathes. A lot of guys would have just been, Nick did what's best for him. Larry Scheidt came up and he was, dead on about, it's a good financial move and it was a good move for his career. He didn't, try to say, we've got a lot of depth at the point guard position, or, we can do a bunch of different things. He was honest. He said, we are thin and frail. That was a strong word from him at the point guard spot. He was very honest about everything. I got a very real sense from him, that he's just being completely honest about the team. And he's even joking around a little bit. A reporter asked him how his summer was going so far, and he said, that's going great, except for, our dearth at the point guard position. It's another fun word from Mr. Larry Scheidt. So there you go. He gets my Reggie Nelson Award. You want to give out your Kyle here?
Sure, yeah. Again, kind of going back to the Rays a little bit, but not necessarily the team, actually. Interesting enough, as I'm sure many sports fans do, I listen to sports talk radio. And, after I go to a Rays game, I got to go to two last week, Thursday against the Phillies and Saturday against the Marlins. And usually when I leave the game, you turn on back home at 6:20 WDAE. And you check the Rays post game with Rich, and it's a call-in show.
Yeah.
And I don't usually listen to much sports talk radio except for maybe Mike and Mike, which isn't a call-in show, obviously.
Maybe the Alligator Sports Podcast.
Yeah, that too, obviously. And I do some podcasts, Bill Simmons. But for legit sports talk radio, where you just have some personality and you call in and you just debate garbage,
yeah.
I think it just leads to garbage because the personalities really aren't that great usually. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah.
But it's Rays post game and it's cool because it's your first chance. They'll give you Joe Maddon's comments, the manager's, over the air 10 seconds after they get them, so you get really reaction and you get to find out things that you're not going to find out by the time you get home because. Even on the internet, you still have to type things, so radio, it's a really live kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then they're call-in segments, so they open up the phone lines, anything you want to discuss about the Rays. So, oh my goodness, I'm driving home Thursday night, I'm in the car with my dad. First of all, you get a caller talking about something about the NBA draft. Okay? Please leave. Secondly, you got someone who wants Rich, the host, to do something for his daughter's birthday party. Okay, please leave. Then the rest of the idiots, you just call to say, go Rays.
Do they not have a call screener?
No. I don't think they do. Because it's just all right, here's Bob from Pinellas Park. And he's like, well, I thought the Rays played real well today. They got, it's like John Madden.
Yeah.
Well, they scored more runs than the other team. So that must be a good thing. Like I must have listened to, by the time I got home, there's probably about 5 or 6 Thursday night, 5 or 6 Saturday nights, about 10 or 11 calls. It was one legit, and I'm not asking for a great question. You don't have to be a reporter in a call-in show. You're asking a post-game host. But, at least one guy Saturday night, because it was Scott Kazmaier's first start back off the DL, somebody brought up, how do you think Scott looked, Scott Kazmaier looked, and then the host could go into, well, his fastball did this, movement, blah, blah, blah,
yeah.
Decent thing. Everyone else is just I think they played well, or I like that play, or thanks for taking the call, go Rays. I would never call in unless I had, something legitimate to say, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just really frustrating, but you listen because you get little tidbits, but you have to listen to so much stupid nonsense. Stepping off the soapbox.
All right, that was powerful. Actually, mine, once again, I have 3 that they could have gone to, but my actual Kyle Jackson is very similar, but first I'm going to run through the 3 that it could have been. The first one is to Phil. Of course, in a proud tradition of giving out Kyle Jackson bad angles of the week.
I enjoy this each and every time.
This is more of a personal attack. I was I logged on to the tweet deck as I want to do on the Twitter, and I saw a post. Phil had retweeted something from somebody, and it said something like faux intellectual about the best way to have lunch. Phil, do you remember what that was?
Yeah, it was with another person, right?
It was like, the best way to have lunch is with another person, engaging in, like, engaging conversation. That was like,
I fully agree with this. That's how I like to spend my lunch.
And that's how you posted. You posted agreed. And I was thinking, well, I learned nothing from that. Like, that, I could have gone without that in my life. And I hate the concept of retweeting, as we've talked about many times. I've blown up on that.
Let me just interject, Adam, that the past 2 days we have ate lunch together and had much intellectual conversation, which I find very ironic since you're giving me a Kyle Jackson Award. But alas, keep going.
That is quite ironic now that you pointed out to me, yeah. The other one, which is fairly related to that, is classes starting back up for Summer B. I'm putting the student back in student journalism.
Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I'm back taking classes. Phil and I have one class together, after which we have lunch and engage in interesting conversation afterward. And Phil tweets about it, I'm sure. But yeah, I was not ready for that. I was used to living that, you know, that life where you go and you write and you come into the office at 7, you know, every other night. But now I'm back in class. I know I get no pity from anybody because, you know, complain about it a little bit more. But I was enjoying my half a summer off, but we're back in class. That's a little bit of a Reggie. It's nice to be back on campus, I guess. But along with that is the overzealous freshmen on campus. We've seen a little bit of that. They're new. I myself was a Summer B freshman here at UF. I sympathize with them entirely. My old roommate and I talked about that a little bit the first day of class. But man, they're all decked out in their Gator stuff. They don't realize that not everybody on campus wears Gator clothes every day. They're all decked out and all that. They're, you know, they're parading around campus with their maps and everything like that. They're a little bit over-talkative in class, as we have found out.
Yeah, I remember a little bit what it's like to be a freshman. Obviously, you don't know what to expect. I came in the fall, actually. But again, you know, you don't necessarily know what you should be doing or shouldn't be doing. But yeah, the class that me and Adam had together, I guess we'll leave it unnamed.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
There's a decent amount of freshmen in the class, and you could just peg some stereotypes. I don't care. There's people that like to talk a lot in class. That's slightly annoying when you have something worthwhile to say, even.
Yeah, it's also a large class.
Right, yeah, and it's a pretty big class. But, and there's one person who you know, engages and says stuff often, and I have no problem. It's kind of like, you raise your hand a lot, that's cool, but you say decent stuff.
Yeah.
Then there is this guy today who I just completely pegged as this high school big man on campus, probably a jock, probably dated a cheerleader, and was just, you know, everybody knew his name, and maybe he got free milkshakes at the diner near his high school.
He went to high school in the 1950s, according to Phil, by the
way. Yeah, hey, diners are awesome, man. But, and then he came to Gainesville, and, you know, thinks that, you know, he's just going to keep walking and everybody's going to keep laying down so that he has a bridge for his feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was sitting in the row behind us today, and I had to restrain myself from swinging at him.
Yeah, that was not good times. So they'll calm down. I myself was not like that as a freshman. I know I leaned a little bit more toward the quiet.
Absolutely. If like, anything, I didn't want to stand out.
Yeah, you don't want to be that guy.
He's definitely that guy.
He is absolutely that guy. At the same time, you don't want to be the opposite of the overzealous freshman, which is the terrified freshman. We have a couple of those in that same class. They sit either in the very front row because they're the good students, or the very back because they're terrified of anybody seeing them. And they don't talk to anybody the whole class. They're very quiet. They have a backpack. They take the notes and everything. They're all very much involved in the class. Not involved in anybody else in the class, however.
No, yeah, those people you worry about, they're socialized a little bit. The one thing I will give credit out for, and hopefully this doesn't come out creepy, although it probably will, is...
maybe you should stop that.
No, it's completely safe for work, whatever.
Okay.
You know, on buses, the buses that you take from off-campus apartments to school...
Yeah.
You know, it's weird, but it's just, there's like this unspoken rule that you don't talk to people, but yet you're seated so close, it's like two person, you know, little rows, you're seated so close to this person, to the point where like, you literally are touching, because there's no way for you to sit not to, and so you ride in, and you know, I'm a decent ride, there's so many stops, it sometimes gets up to a half hour, maybe it's 20 minutes. And, you know, the seat next to me will fill one or two stops after me.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sitting next to this person, I'm a nice guy. We're complete strangers. I don't care. Male, female, really doesn't matter. We're riding to campus together for 20 to 25 minutes, touching each other because we're so close. Our bodies are, like, next to each other. And yet, like, if I was to say, like, hey, how you doing today? I would be the creepiest guy. If it was a girl, I would be hitting on her, stalking her. And it's really sad. So I just have to sit on the bus and listen to my iPod. And, you know, I wish I could meet new people.
No, that's very true. My roommate and I talk a lot about that. Like, why can't we talk to people on the bus?
It's so weird. Like, and my point why I was taking this back to freshmen a little bit is, like, newer people, like, don't have this, like, phobia to talking on the bus. Like, on the other day, I was riding campus, and there was these two girls. I wasn't going to say anything because then I'd be hitting on them or something ridiculous. So I was listening to my iPod, and then I just took it off because I finished a BS report, I think it was. Right. And they were talking about the bus route that we were on. They would take the 20. And they had disagreement. They weren't sure where it goes, where they should get off, how often it runs. And, like, I heard them go back and forth. Like, one was seated in the row in front of us, and she was turning around talking to the girl seated next to me. Yeah. And I was like, all right, like, I'm just going to be a good person, and if they think I'm creepy, I don't really care, because I'm just not.
You'd rather be creepy than see them be dumb.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just going to be a nice guy, because I just can't, like, a good Samaritan, like, I just can't watch you, like, you know, fail like this. So I was like, where are you going, you know, and then I told them, like, where to get off, where it stops, and because they didn't know that, like, it goes, and it's like a loop, like, it turns around at the end and comes back, uh-huh. They thought, like, I don't know, the guys, they thought it kept going before it turned around or something, or it took a different route. Some routes, some bus take a different route coming back, I guess I see that.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, it goes here, you probably want to get off here, and, you know, it runs this often. And then, like, there was a pause, and she even asked me another question. I was like, oh my god, I have to be okay now because she's asking me another question. And I was like, wow, like, I could tell they were young, you know, so I was like, oh god, you know, like, but I, you know, like, I felt good that I was able to help them. You know, but heaven forbid I was probably like, hey, how's it going? Like, what classes are you taking? Then, you know, she probably would have got up and left her seat.
All bets are off at that point, yeah. It's really interesting. Yeah, the bus, my roommate and I talk about this a lot. The bus is one of the most interesting places in college in terms of just, like, studying it, like, studying people on there. Like, if I were a sociology major, I would just, like, sit on the bus for a while.
Yo, it should be because we're all the same age, too. Yeah. It's not like it's, like, a New York City subway where you have, like, people you don't really know how old they are ever. Like, normally, the bus is entirely college students. We all go to the University of Florida. We have that in common.
We could not have more in common, I would argue. We're in the same class with some of these people.
Yeah, it's like, and I know probably what's going to happen is since I go to campus the same time 5 days a week, you start riding the bus with the same people every day. And it's even worse when you come home, because somehow the buses are always more packed later in the day. I'm not quite sure how that works, but because it's not like everybody's class at the same time. Yeah. But anyway, and then you're coming home, and then it's packed. People are standing.
Yeah.
I'm standing next to someone. I'm like 3 inches away, and I can't say anything to them. And it's just like, standing's even worse because you can't, like, fall asleep even. You're just standing there, can't talk to either of the people on either side of you unless they're your friends and you know them. And you're like, all right, I got 30 minutes. I can't sleep. Can't really get to my iPod because if I'm standing, then somebody's got to get past me to walk off the bus. I can't talk to anyone, so I just hate my life for the next 30 minutes.
You know what was fun on the bus today, though, and I wish this person had talked to me? Somebody who was reading the paper, and I had a column in today's paper, and I had my face in there, you know, my mugshot or whatever. Somebody's reading it. They're sitting behind me. I'm sitting, you know, facing the window or whatever, and they're facing forward. So I'm, you know, they're reading the paper. I see them look up at me, recognize me clearly. Like, you know, they look back down. They do that. And then just keep reading. Don't say, don't say hello. Don't say, hey, you're this guy. You wrote this, right? Don't talk about me, you know, don't talk about that with me or anything. Just keep reading. Just look awkward.
That's
makes me feel awkward.
Yeah, I've seen that, like, I've been, like, behind people, like, over their shoulders. So, you know, obviously, I'm not even sure if they recognize me. But it is kind of cool to be like, oh, this person's reading my stuff.
Yeah.
They may think I'm an idiot, but at least they're reading my stuff. But, yeah, like, and, like, you get friends that'll, like, see it. And, like, people I have in my classes every once, I'll be like, oh, are you this guy?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And then you're, like, you're wondering, like, oh, so now she thinks I'm really stupid because I wrote this new paper or something. But, yeah, it's like, hey, we're just people, folks. Like, I mean, yeah, we got some podcasts. I get to ramble for about an hour every week or so. But, you know, it's like, we're just people. We're just students. We go to the same university. We're the same age. We go through the same issues. You know, it's like, we go to parties. You know, like, we're not aliens.
Yeah.
It's like, literally, I might just try it. I'm going to go on an experiment.
Is this it?
I don't know. I feel like I'm on a rant, and I might not be able to stomach this, but sometime hopefully this summer, maybe I'll just, like, for a week, I'll just talk to whoever's next to me on the bus and just, like, I'll set up my own personal blog, like, confessions from a bus
you
or something retarded.
You should do a Twitter feed with you on the bus.
Yeah, sure. I and just see, like, how many people, like, don't talk to me, or I get, like, a one word, you know. It's like when you come home from school and your mom asks how your day was, like, hey, are you good? Bye.
Yeah.
You know, like, that would probably be even more awkward. It's like, you sat next to them, like, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Put in my iPod.
Put the headphones
obviously, I'm not going to talk to anyone that has an iPod on. But that's the thing. That's why I take my iPod off or my iPhone off sometimes in the buses, is because I don't want to appear antisocial, but it's like, I could not have my iPod, and you could sit next to me and not have your iPod, but we're not going
to
talk.
No, it's awkward. And to me, like, the worst thing is when you come out of a class with, you know, you're with somebody, you're on the same bus, you sit close to each other, like, you're on the bus back reading the same book for class, the same assigned reading, you know, you try to say something to them, like, oh, you know, how are you liking this class so far? That's all right. End of conversation.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. And then, like, if you ask, have everybody ask for a name, like, introduce yourself or anything, like... And it's almost, I mean, it's a little bit an extension of, like, classes themselves, a little bit. You know, a lot of times there's big classes, and if you come in with friends, you know, like, the class that we have together, I'm not necessarily looking to meet new people. If I miss a class, you'll help me out. And most of them are freshmen anyway, and seem really weird, as much as people probably said that about me years ago.
Yeah.
But in my other class, my English class, I know no one. Yeah, and I'm not an English major, so it's not even people that I recognize. Like, I've had classes with them before, but sure enough, you know, out of the kindness of someone's heart... next to me, like, I sat in the same spot. I try to sit in the same spot day to day, because other people do. So you have to have some kind of camaraderie.
You develop a crowd,
yeah. And so, and it's not, this is a small class. It's Turlington building. It's like 20, 25 people or so.
Okay.
It's an upper level English class. I need the elective. Really interesting class. But, and this girl sits down next to me. She's like, oh, did you do the reading today? And I almost wanted to, like, turn around and make sure she wasn't talking to anyone else. Because I was like, surely she must have a friend in this class that she's talking to, because there's an unwritten rule that you can't talk to someone that you just randomly meet in the class. And then, shockingly, she must be really outgoing. I was like, oh, I didn't get to finish, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, we're talking about the book.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, this guy comes around next to us. We're having a three-person conversation. We've never met before. We're in an English class. Me and her are not English majors. He is. We're talking about this class, talking about this teacher. I'm just amazed.
Wow.
Yeah.
The kindness of some people. See,
really?
That's the thing, and it stands out so much when you have that.
But that's what's so sad. It's like, I don't want to make such a big deal out of this, but it's so rare, and so many people you would talk to, and they just, like, look at you like, yeah, you're weird.
Yeah.
All right.
I walked into my other class, which is a history class. I'm a history minor, not a major or whatever. Most of the people in here are history majors, and I've never seen a group of people look so collectively depressed as they did when I walked into that classroom. But then the teacher comes in, he's new, he's young, he's idealistic, he doesn't know, he hasn't been broken down by UF yet and all the lack of money we have and the lack of functioning equipment the history department has and everything. So he's looking to write on the board with a marker. At UF, in the history department, you bring your own markers if you're going to write on the board. So then he looked absolutely crushed when this happened. And I made a joke to the person sitting in front of me, because he literally sprinted out of the classroom to go downstairs to get one and came back up. And I made a joke to him about that, you know, about how the teacher looked, you know, he looked depressed, he looked broken down by that. And the kid and I, we talked about that for a little while. We talked about the state of UF for a little while. It was nice to have a conversation with somebody who's not necessarily your friend out in UF.
And that's the thing, though. It's so ridiculous. Maybe someone's going to listen to this and say they don't have this problem, but, like, these things stand out. That's what's... Like, I wish this was just normal. Like, it's just, like, society. It's like, if I was on, like, anywhere with someone and something happened, like, you're on a plane, I would say something to someone, but you do it in a college setting when I have more in common with these people. We're taking the same class. We're riding on the same bus. We probably live in the same area. Like, we get off and on at the same bus stop. And you know, it's like, it really stands out, like, oh, that might be the only time this semester I've talked to someone on a bus.
Yeah. All right, well, that actually was not my Kyle Jackson, despite that epic, inspired rant that we both just went on there. Mine is similar to yours, as I alluded to earlier. Mine also goes to Rays fans. However, it's for not showing up to games.
Oh,
you talk
yeah.
about that Phillies series. It was a World Series rematch. You know, it was back at the Trop. The Rays lost. Looking for some revenge, right?
Yeah.
They want to get back in this. World Series rematch? Nobody shows up. It's like half of the Trop. It was depressing. The local papers blew up. The fans just, you know, hated on them a little bit for that. And I can't blame them. Show up for the games. If you want to get rid of this reputation that you're all just bandwagon fans who start caring what your team does well, show up. I was so let down by that. I went Thursday to the game, the same one that you were at, and I sat, my tickets maybe were originally for the upper deck, and maybe I sat out in the outfield, maybe I did, I'm just saying. I sat by the foul pole, and there were six rows of empty seats in front of me, and it was the same thing on the other side of the field.
It's really sad, yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say, except that I try to go, and I know you do as much as possible, and I yell loudly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Phillies thing, yeah, we set a record for, like, least fans at a World Series rematch by, like, a large margin. Like, we had, like, 19,000 plus or something.
Yeah, 19,000.
Yeah, about that, you know, around there. Before that, the least number of fans show up to a regular season World Series rematch the year after they played in the World Series, 36,000.
Unreal.
We're 16,000 short.
It's great. I looked up somewhere, one of the newspapers down there had it on their website. It was one of the worst attended games that night.
I know. Yeah, like, well, because that's what I said. I was like, well, it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series. You know, people work, you know, like, people have things during the week, possibly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it, like, out of the 15 Major League games that night, I was like 13th behind, like, terrible games. I don't even remember what they were, but, like, the Royals game and, like not even rivalries.
No.
Like, just random games in bad markets, not even big markets.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And that, to me, like, because I am a Rays fan, you are a Rays fan, we are actually fans, we have been fans of the team before they started to, to win the AL.
Right.
But this really gives the Rays fans a terrible name, and it's a terrible, just terrible reputation if you don't show up. And maybe I'm going to start to believe what everybody says. Obviously, I believe there were bandwagon fans before because, it's pretty obvious in terms of just the merchandise and the ticket sales and everything. But you'd like to believe, and this is the excuse I made, fans have to come from somewhere. You know, the Rays are still a relatively young franchise in that aspect. So you'd think, okay, this is where it happens. This is where the Rays develop a fan base. Maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to hope. I mean, as I said, I also got a chance to go to the Saturday night game against the Marlins. Obviously not as marquee of an opponent, but it was a weekend. And Saturday nights, it was part of the Rays summer concert series. You know, the game was followed up by a Pat Benatar concert.
Woo!
And no, she did not hit me with her best shot because I left.
Did she? Oh, I was going to ask if she just played that four times.
Yeah, she probably did. I don't know. And it was cool. The night was 80s theme. And that, like, it wasn't big to me because I'm not a big 80s guy, but that's cool. And maybe it obviously drew out a lot more people. There was like 36,000 people there. But you could tell they were not really Rays fans. You know, like, because that game, I was stuck way up in the upper deck and actually couldn't really move down. You know, just didn't.
Yeah.
We were up in like 314. But like, and you're, just people didn't know what to do with the game. Like, I wanted like a manual. Like, oh goodness. Here comes the rant of all rants. All right. Close game. It ended up being, what, it was a 3-2 win or a 4-3 win? We won by one, a sack fly in the bottom of the ninth.
Right.
But this time it was a 2-1, 2-2. It's late in the game. Seventh or eighth inning. I don't even know who's at bat because it happened for so long. I think the Rays were trying to get out of a jam. They were on defense. Wave starts going. Like, all right, I'm all for waves. If we're up 5-0, even if we're down 5-0, game's not close. Got to keep yourself entertained. I don't really care. There's always going to be kids that do it anyway. This thing went around the trap 10 times. And as it comes by, I'm standing up and leaning over people to try and see this key 3-2 pitch with the bases loaded. And we're trying to hold the lead. And the wave keeps going around the trap.
That's unbelievable.
I was furious.
The thing that got me mad as well is I went to that Thursday night game. It was Rays Phillies, of course, and there were I'd say half the stadium was Phillies fans. Half the fans are Phillies fans. Obviously, it's a local, the local team, the Clearwater Phillies, as they were, Phillies spring train there.
Right.
The franchise is, around Clearwater, and that was there before the Rays, if you want to get technical, but still.
Oh, man. And I won't even go much into this, but not only that, I had like seven absolutely obnoxious Philly fans sitting behind me. They probably tailgated quite a little bit before the game and decided air horns. I didn't even know you could bring air horns in a drop.
No.
I don't think you could. I think they smuggled them in, even though there's security. I don't know what happened here. There's a big breakdown, but I had air horns going off behind me. And that was Thursday night. You were there. We fell down. The Philly scored four runs at the top of the first inning. And, of course, you can imagine that they were simply insufferable and just going nuts, and I hated my life. And then the Rays ended up winning.
Yeah.
And, of course, these were people that could not receive as well as they gave. And they simply left after the seventh inning. And then it was Yeah, so they're ragging on us when they're winning, and then they're losing. They're like, well, we won in October. That's it. We won in October.
Did they say that as they were
absolutely. No, no. They said that while they were still sitting in the stands before they left. I heard that come back 100 times. Like, okay, come up with something new, possibly. Like, that's true. Cool. Like, you cool. I'll give you a cookie. Like, it's not October. Is this June? Is this October? Like, and they did one of those, like, I'm going to talk to my buddy, but everybody around us can hear us. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man, is this June or is this October?
Yeah.
I don't know. This must be June.
He was talking to you through his friend, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were celebrating in October, and then it was, well, we'll just let them win tonight.
I'm sure, and that's what they...
Yeah,
they
thankfully they left, and the Rays won 10-4,
yeah.
So suck on that.
They let them win twice in a row.
Sure. Right.
All right, so there you go. That's this podcast. We went off for a little longer, but to be fair, it's been a while since we last podcast, so we took that week off. We had a lot to say, clearly, a lot about buses and awkward social situations, but, you know, between the alligator sports stuff and awkward social situations, that's pretty much our lives. So, yeah, I guess that about wraps it up for this show. Look back next week. Definitely keep an eye on the top 10 UF athletes. If you're still listening, send any feedback to sports@alligator.org. Send your comments on the top 10 UF athletes to sports@alligator.org. Thanks for listening.